The dirt road that climbs the hill back of old man Macaulay's barn, or Macaulay's mountain, as people in the Narrows call it, climbs with a steady and certain resolve. It bisects the mountain like a stripe bisects a flag, running from the bottom right of the hill until it loops around to the other side at the top and disappears. You wouldn't want to drive up it in your city car, even though you could make it as far as Macaulay's sugar shack. Above the sugar bush, you wouldn't want to drive anything along the road, except maybe a dirt bike or an ATV, though plenty of people go walking up there. Once you pass the sugar bush, there's grass growing down the middle of the road, and the trees are closing in, and it's possible to imagine a time when the forest might swallow the road entirely. But it is a grand place, and you can understand why two boys who walked up there for the first time unsupervised, as Sam and his friend Murphy did this summer, would come away with adventure on their minds. This was the first summer Sam's been in Big Narrows without Dave and Morley. He is at that awkward age, too young to be left alone, too old to be looked after. And so he went alone to visit his grandmother, and his best friend, Murphy, went along for the company. The boys stayed with Margaret and her new husband, Smith, and they roamed around Big Narrows on two old bikes that Smith found for them, exploring the world in a way that they never could have if they had stayed in the city. Macaulay's Mountain soon became their favorite place. There's just so much adventure for boys to find on the mountain. The jumping cliff, the lake, the old abandoned cabin. But nothing more exciting than the call to adventure that radiates like waves of heat from the abandoned car that is rusting away where the road flattens at the edge of the blueberry field just before the pond. Over the years, countless boys have come upon the wreck and have reacted pretty much the same way as Sam and Murphy reacted when they came upon it. Murphy saw it first. He stopped dead in his tracks, his mouth dropped, his heartbeat accelerating. "What?" said Sam, looking at his friend. "Oh my God," said Sam, looking where his friend was pointing. Both of them motionless now. The car was no more than 10 yards away, and both of them were thinking exactly the same thing. Dead bodies. As if they were one, they both took a step backwards. "There can't be bodies," said Sam, reasonably. "It looks like it's been there for years." "Skeletons," said Murphy. "Zombies," said Sam. "Lost souls." What more could a boy ask for in the dog days of summer than a half-buried, wrecked car, a whiff of fear, and the possibility of fear ratcheting into terror? "A plan," said Murphy. "We need a plan." And so they worked out a plan, driven more by their curiosity than their bravery. One of them would approach the car. The other? The other would hang back so if anything bad happened, he could go for help. "Who?" said Sam. "Me," said Murphy. "I run faster. If something happens, I can run for help." "You can't run faster," said Sam. "I can beat you anytime." So they flipped a nickel. And so it was Sam who carried the stick they dug out of the forest, swinging it by his hip like a club as he walked ever so carefully toward the car. The blueberry field suddenly still. His feet crunching the gravel on the road, his heart pounding. His body half turned in case he had to bolt. "Careful," said Murphy, ready to bolt himself. It was like something from one of those movies, that moment when the hero confronts the great fearful thing, the beast, the mountain, the werewolf, or, in this case, what was left of a 1948 Studebaker Land Cruiser. The car once belonged to Peter Macaulay, the older of the two Macaulay brothers. Peter put the car in the ditch on an October night in the 1960s. He had planned to pull it out, but it snowed that night, and the snow didn't melt. And that meant the car had to stay on the mountain until spring. And that was the spring that Peter McCauley was killed. No one could believe it at the time. Peter, so full of life, so full of adventure. Peter, who everyone knew would one day take over the McCauley farm until he died on it. Peter, dead and gone. No one had the heart to move the car that summer. And the next one, Peter's father, the original old man McCauley, passed on himself, and so the car stayed put. A rusting memorial to Peter and his lost youth. The present owner of the McCauley farm, the latest old man McCauley, is actually Peter's younger brother, Garth. Garth was in the car the night Peter put it in the ditch, and driving the tractor the afternoon the combine killed him. Car was all Garth had left of his brother, and he liked that it was up there by the field. He never made any effort to move it. Any useful bits from the engine had been long scavenged, and the window shot out by hunters, but the steering wheel was still there, and remarkably, it still had tires. Sam peered in the passenger side window. "It's empty," he said. "Back seat," said Murphy. "Empty," said Sam. "What about under the seat?" said Murphy. "I can't see under the seat," said Sam. "Look under the seat," said Murphy. "I'd have to open the door," said Sam. And he walked back and he handed Murphy the stick and he said, "You look under the seats." Murphy rolled his eyes. Murphy said, "Do I have to do everything?" There was nothing under the seats. And soon enough, they were sitting in it. Murphy in the driver's seat, Sam beside him in the same seat where Garth McCauley was sitting that October night so long ago. Murphy had his hands on the steering wheel. "If we could get it out of the ditch," said Murphy, "we could drive it down the mountain." Murphy was trying to jerk the wheel to the left and the right, leaning forward and peering out over the hood, turning around, checking his blind spot. Then he let the wheel go and he reached out and he opened the glove compartment. There was a snake sleeping in there. It fell into Sam's lap. Sometime in their lives, those boys will move faster. After all, they're still young. "It was in my lap," said Sam when they stopped running about 200 yards down the road. "It was a rattler and it was in my lap." "It wasn't a rattler," said Murphy. "It was a mamba. The deadliest snake in the world." It was half an hour before they were able to summon the resolve to return. They didn't want to. They had to. The idea of being behind the wheel of that car with the wind in their hair was too good. "Wouldn't we need to have our license?" said Sam. They were back in the front seat. Murphy shook his head. Murphy pointed out the window. Murphy said, "That isn't technically a road. Or this a car, for that matter, technically. There's no engine. It's a wreck. You don't need a license to drive a wreck." "My father has a license," said Sam. "The trick," said Murphy, "is going to be getting it out of the ditch." Now they were circling the car, Murphy squatting down on his haunches, peering at the back wheels. Murphy said, "We're going to need a jack and a pulley and some boards. We can jack it up and put the boards under the wheels and pull it out." It was Sam who found the crowbar lying on the front bumper. It was Murphy who said they should pry open the trunk. "There could be a jack in there," said Murphy. He never imagined there'd be a pulley, too. They found a pile of boards near the old cabin by the lake. By the time they gathered everything up, it was time for supper. "We have to go," said Sam. And so they went home and came back the next morning. They worked at it all morning. At noon, they sat on the roof of the car and ate their lunch, their shirts off, their faces stained with mud and sweat. "Soon," said Murphy. "If we get it all the way down," said Sam, "we could fix it up. And when we get our licenses, we'd have our own car." They had never worked with such concentration and determination in their young lives. If they worked half that hard, a quarter that hard at school, they would skip grades. They'd win scholarships and medals. They would go to Oxford or Cambridge or God knows where. But schoolwork doesn't involve sleeping snakes or old cars or the promise of great adventure. They ate their lunch and they jumped off the roof, the smell of the sun on their skinny arms. And they got back at it, jacking the wheels one by one and shoring them up with the wood they had found by the cabin. And slowly, incredibly, unbelievably, they got it done. All four wheels, shored up and clear. "Okay," said Murphy. "Okay," said Sam. They had the pulley wrapped around a tree on the far side of the road. "Slowly," said Murphy. "Slowly," said Sam. And slowly it came, as if by magic, with slow and certain determination. Before they knew it, they had it on the road, lined up and pointing down the slope with a log across the front wheels to stop it from rolling away on them. "Are you ready?" said Murphy. Murphy was standing on the road by the passenger side bumper. "Ready," said Sam. There were no seat belts. Sam was lashed into the driver's seat with the rope that they had brought with them. He was wearing ski goggles. "Three," said Murphy. "Are you sure you can do this?" said Sam. "Two," said Murphy. "Just get out of the way," said Sam. "One," said Murphy. And he yanked the log from in front of the wheels. Nothing happened. Sam said, "Nothing's happening." And Murphy ran to the back of the car to give it a push. But before he was halfway there, the car was moving by itself, rolling down the road slowly. Slow enough that Murphy was able to easily swing himself into the passenger seat, tie himself into place, and put on his goggles. They were going faster now. How fast? Depends who you ask. Let's just say a lot faster than you'd want either your son or daughter coming down the side of a hill lashed into a 1946 Studebaker Land Cruiser wearing ski goggles. Sam shouted, "Which one's the brake pedal?" Murphy said, "There are no brakes." Sam said, "How are we going to stop it then?" Murphy said, "I'm working on that. Just get us around this corner." They made it around the corner and the next one, but not the third. Which was surprising because they were actually slowing down, coming onto a long flat stretch when the front wheel caught the ditch and Sam lost control. And then, well, if you could get them to talk to you about it, they'd both swear they were airborne. That they got air and then they hit the ground with a mighty thwack and it shuddered to a stop. "Yowzas," said Sam. "How fast were we going?" 100, said Murphy. "Maybe 2. They untied themselves and they got out and they stood on the side of the road and Sam said, "This is the best day of my entire life." It was only when they got back to their bikes that it occurred to them that they might have done something wrong. "Joyriding," said Sam. "Grand Theft Auto," said Murphy. "If they catch us, they'll send us to juvie." They went back up and they took off their shirts and they used their shirts to wipe the car from top to bottom. "Everywhere we touched it," said Murphy. And then they went back down and got their bikes and they pedaled home. They talked it over, backwards and forwards, inside and out. They lasted a day and a half before they told anyone about it. 2 days after their ride on the mountain, they went to the police station. They stood by the door uncertainly. Police chief and sole member of the Big Narrows Police Force, Revlin Cavanaugh, was sitting at his desk, preoccupied with a bowl of his wife's homemade corn chowder. "Come on in, boys," he said when he finally spotted them. "What can I do for you?" "We're here to report a crime," said Sam. Theft under, said Murphy. Joyriding and driving a vehicle with an obliterated ID. I beg your pardon, said Revlin, reaching for his statute book, confused. Section 354.2, said Murphy. Revlin stared at his half-finished soup sadly and said, we better go check this out, boys. When they got outside, he said, you leave your bikes here. We'll go in the squad car. When they got into the car, he said, I'm afraid you boys are going to have to ride in back. Procedure. Once they were out of town, he put on the siren and the flashing red light. Sam and Murphy sat in the back seat as white as ghosts. No one said much as they walked up the mountain, past the sugar shack and the trail to the jumping cliff, around the corner to the big rock, up the little rise, their little hearts pounding, and then around the next corner to where they had driven into the ditch. And when they got there, the car was gone. It was right here, said Murphy. There, said Sam, pointing. But it wasn't. It wasn't there at all. They kept climbing. Around the three corners, one, two, three, up the long, slow hill, Revlin taking off his hat and wiping the sweat from his brow. And there it was, where it had always been, where they had found it that first afternoon, where it had been for all those years since that night in October when Peter McCauley drove it off the road with his brother Garth sitting by his side. Boys, said Chief Kavanaugh, shaking his head and pointing at it, doesn't look like we have a crime here. But you can see the dirt, said Sam, by the wheels where we dug it up. You can see where we dug it up, said Murphy. Boys, said Chief Kavanaugh, what I see is a 1948 Studebaker Land Cruiser sitting in the same place where it sat for some 50 years now. I think you boys are in the clear. He drove them back to town. And they got on their bikes and they rode out of town slowly. They stopped on the Thamesville Bridge and they took the path down and sat on the riverbank throwing sticks in the water and tried to figure it out. It happened, said Sam. We did it. I don't know, said Murphy. There are many cases of socio-psychological phenomena mentioned in the literature. People can become convinced of things that never happened. UFOs and religious miracles, to name a two. It's just mass hysteria. We weren't hysterical, said Sam. We did it. Someone took it back. They'll never know the truth of it. Neither of them will ever figure it all out. Murphy will never go back to the mountain. But Sam will. And every time he goes up there, he'll tell the person or the people he's with about those 3 days this summer. And they'll make their own guesses as to what happened, but no one will ever get it right. Peter's brother Garth, old man McCauley, knows a whole lot more than anyone else about that car slowly rusting away on the side of the road that is slowly disappearing itself. But even he doesn't know all of it. He knows that Sam and Murphy found the ropes and the pulley that he left in the trunk, especially for boys like them. And he knows that over the decades, five other pairs of boys have done pretty much the same thing. Boys who found the things he left and figured out how to use them to get his brother's car out of the ditch and ride it down the mountain one more time. He always knows when they're at it, and he's always there with his tractor to pull the car back up the hill and set it back where it belongs. And when he's done that, to inflate the tires and to put the rubber snake back in the glove compartment. Reassured in some strange way that his brother left something behind that still gives people joy. He knows that part, but even he doesn't know all of it. He doesn't know, for instance, that Stephen Kerrigan and Megan Laureus were sitting in the back seat of his brother's old car on the summer evening that Stephen proposed to Megan. Or that Bernadette Armstrong spent a night in it some 40 years ago when she was a young mother in her early 30s and thought that she was going to leave Alfred, and decided the next morning as the sun rose over the mountain that she loved him too much to do that. She deserved better, but she resolved to do better instead. And she had a good cry, and she walked down the mountain feeling the better for it. These things he doesn't know, these moments fading like old photographs, like the memory of his brother Peter, who left the car at the edge of the blueberry fields near the top of the mountain and vanished himself before he could get it back. All these things hover in the air up there, while the forest closes in and the car rusts, and Peter lies in his grave in the graveyard at the bottom of the hill. God rest his soul.